Good morning, Tucson, and welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios with me, your host, Zach Yenser, here on Tipping Point. Daily news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. As always, thanks for hanging out with us here as we dive into a couple of interesting topics today. And looking forward to spending the hour with you. We're going to continue our wide-ranging election 2020 coverage with a local state race. We're going to talk to candidate Billy Peer. He's a Democrat running for state house in Legislative District 2, and that's an interesting race for many reasons, so we're highlighting it and looking forward to getting to know Billy Peard a little bit better, our election 2020 coverage. We'll talk at the bottom of the hour, the surprising numbers behind TUSD's free and reduced lunch. And then this one's been in the news the last couple of days. I wanted to kind of bat it around with you, to be honest, Tucson, because there are very few issues that I've recently seen both conservatives and liberals agree on, strangely enough, in the last 48 hours, than this issue of the homeless in Tucson's parks. The park safety crew at the city put out an interesting notice about distributing food to homeless in Tucson's parks, and the response was wild. It was wild. So I want to talk about that and get your thoughts, Tucson. So we do here on Tipping Point. There's a live line. Call in, have a conversation, talk about issues that matter to us. So those are the three themes we're going to cover today on this edition of Tipping Point. But without further ado, Billy Peard, welcome to the studio for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
So let's set the table really quick. It's a huge district. Legislative District 2 is, you were mentioning, 80 miles from kind of tip to tip, roughly. Give us the lay of the land. What's District 2?
That's right. So it starts in the north around 22nd Street. So if you can picture 22nd Street and I-10. And it goes with a few breaks in between, but it goes mostly down the I-19 Santa Cruz River corridor until the country ends at Nogales. And it includes a lot of urban sections, suburban sections, rural communities, mining, ranching, a little bit of everything. It's kind of the gamut of Arizona culture, the gamut of Arizona industry-wise, and it's a really interesting space to campaign.
So here's the other interesting part besides the geography of the district, and again, it's rather large. There's a couple of things shifting in LD2. Rosanna Gabaldon, who's the incumbent on the House side, has termed out in the House, and so she's going to look to transition to the Senate. And our current senator in LD2, Andrea D'Alessandro, has turned out in the Senate, and so she'll be running to be one of the two House seats in LD2. So we've got a switcheroo happening in both directions, which, as you kind of joked, I'm not sure that the 1994 term limiting had that in mind, but it is the letter of the law. It is allowed. And Daniel Hernandez Jr. Is not termed out. He's running for re-election in the House, and so that's your competition in LD2. Daniel Hernandez, State Senator Andrea D'Alessandro. You picked an easy first race there, didn't you, Billy Peard?
Well, no, I like to tell people I've never encountered anything. I've never tackled anything that's not a challenge, so I'm up for this one as well.
So with that in mind, give us a little bit about your background, and before you give us kind of the short version of how you got to this point, I like to ask candidates this, and it works because it's the name of the show. Tipping point. What was your tipping point? What was that moment where you said, I have to be one of the guys or gals in this race? What was that moment?
Well, I had been contemplating running for office for quite some time, and the tipping point for me, I didn't, of course, know what form or what shape it would take, but the tipping point for me was, frankly, 10 years ago. In 2010, I was living, I grew up here in Tucson, but I was living at the time in 2010 in the East Coast, and I watched from a distance as our state legislature passed in April of 2010, one of the worst pieces of legislation, in my view, in Arizona history, SB 1070, and which kicked off several months and several years of national attention placed on Arizona, and for all the wrong reasons, in my view. That's what planted in my head the idea that I wanted to come back to Tucson, and that I wanted to do something. And I, of course, thought maybe it would include running for office, maybe it would be activism on a different level, but that was a really formative moment for me.
What's been, give us the last two or three years of your, as you call it, activism or work in Tucson. What have you been up to the last couple of years?
Well, since early part of 2017, from early 2017 to early 2019, I had been the staff attorney for the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, here in Southern Arizona. Following the 2016 elections, the local ACLU team had decided to dedicate some resources specifically to Southern Arizona, just like everything else in this state. ACLU is predominantly a Maricopa operation in Arizona, but they had decided to invest more resources into Southern Arizona because they wanted to have eyes and ears here on the ground, in large part to take on what was anticipated to be, and I think what proved to be, excesses and abuses by the Trump administration with regard to the border and immigration enforcement. So for 2 years, I was that person, the eyes and ears on the ground here in Southern Arizona. In more recent months, I had worked on the team that was involved with what became Proposition 205. I like to tell people, not the marijuana proposition from 2 years ago, which was also 205, the statewide proposition, but rather the citywide Prop 205, which affectionately is referred to as the Sanctuary City Initiative.
And what's your postmortem on that? And we'll spend 30 seconds or less on it. Did it surprise you, the result? I mean, it for a blue bastion of a community, the numbers surprised some and didn't surprise others. But what did you make of how that turned out?
Well, I think our team didn't know what to expect. We knew that there were going to be large numbers of registered Democrats who perhaps liked the notion of a sanctuary city, perhaps liked the notion of pushing back on the Trump administration and liked the notion of their city government doing so. But we knew there was going to be a significant subset of Democrats who were going to vote no. And a lot of it, from my perspective, I can't speak for the others on the team, from my perspective, money talks. There were more than $300,000 spent against us, raised from predominantly from corporate interests here locally, but also corporate interests from out of state. And we simply didn't have the money to send a counter message out to the 90,000 plus voters in Tucson who ended up casting ballots.
We're with Billy Peard, Democrat candidate for Legislative District 2. When we come back from a short break, I want to get into the choice that voters, especially in the primary here, short term, have in Legislative District 2. Curious to get your assessment, really, of how you stack up against your other two competitors. You also highlight a few key issues that seem to be a broad platform, but you speak to a number of issues, I think seven or eight specifically on your website. And I want to dig into a little bit of details and policy on those and give as good of a picture as we can to the Southern Arizona voters listening to the election 2020 primary opportunity to be had here with the Arizona State House Legislative District 2. We'll continue part two with Billy Peard here on Tipping Point after a short break and some messages from our great sponsors. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Today's hot real estate market comes with its own challenges. If you're trying to buy a home, you have to move fast or it's gone fast. Selling your home, that's just always a hassle. but it doesn't have to be your experience. My friend Jason Carlton is a real estate consultant servicing the Tucson metro area. His passion is to help families sell and buy homes with expertise, genuine care, and responsiveness. Feel free to call or text him with any real estate needs to get started. 520-310-6761.
When did you lose control? Was it when you became a number and not a person? Or was it when you accepted that this is just the way things are? Truth is, you didn't lose control. You gave it up. Because you have a choice. You can make them too big to fail and fail to belong to something bigger. Or you can put your money where your values lie and make your community too strong to fail. The choice is yours. Or are you going to give that up too? Vantage West. Banks own you. You own us.
Federally insured by NCUA.
It's that time of year. Everyone hates it. It's tax time. But there's no reason to stress. Shanae and the team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes can take care of it all for you and make it simple and easy. For Tipping Point listeners only, Shanae is offering a one-time special offer of 50% off your personal or business tax prep. Call 520-838-0856 and let her know Zach sent you to get started.
So many of you listening right now are leading a successful and growing business here in Tucson. You know it depends on finding and keeping the right talent. Doing it right can help you stand out and have an edge as a leading employment brand. Wing it, and you might see a great candidate head to a competitor. The Talent Store has helped local Tucson companies like yours win the battle for talent through their recruiting services and consulting. Whether you're looking for a high-level leader, filling a key position, or just want to retain and develop your current team, visit yourtalentstore.com today for a free consultation.
Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point for part two of my Get to Know the Candidate conversation, part of our election 2020 coverage with Billy Peard, one of three candidates running for Arizona State House Legislative District 2. We talked about the uniqueness of this race on two counts in the first segment. One is just the size of Legislative District 2. It's a rather large district. But also, who is running and why in District 2. Daniel Hernandez is the incumbent. Andrea D'Alessandro is the state senator from the district who has termed out and will be running for the other House seat, and Rosanna Gabaldon has termed out on the House side and will be running for the Senate. So just some really interesting dynamics in Legislative District 2, and we're with one of those candidates, Billy Peard, today. And on that note, Billy, and we'll use this to get into your platform a little bit, in the primary, Democratic voters will have three options, you, Daniel Hernandez, and Andrea D'Alessandro. If you had to create a contrast, if you had to say, this is why I'm different, and this is why a Democratic voter should vote for me over the other two, make the case. Give us a little bit of a contrast to process through.
Well, I think in 2020, as we're seeing at the presidential level as well, not to compare myself with any of the presidential field, but I think Democratic voters have a choice, as far as basic core values. I think most Democratic candidates, including in this race, agree on 80, maybe 90% of core values. But it's a matter of focus and emphasis. If in 2020 you're running for public office, in my view, in Arizona, and you're not talking about education, when Arizona falls 48th, 49th, 50th in the country, depending on your statistical measure, and if you're running for public office in Arizona in 2020 and not talking about water and water scarcity, you're not emphasizing issues like that, and there's others we could list off, but if you're not emphasizing certain key issues that makes Arizona particularly vulnerable as an economy, particularly vulnerable as a society, and you're not offering unique, creative, out-of-the-box ideas and solutions and proposals on those types of issues, candidly, not to put too fine of a point on it, but why are you running for public office if you're not prepared to confront in a creative, dynamic way those core issues?
Certainly, one of the, and for reasons that preceded time in office, Daniel Hernandez Jr. has a lot of name ID in that district and would say, I am an education act advocate. So I want to dig in a little bit. Give us a maybe a policy difference or something that you've located about his addressing of education issues that you would say, no, I'm doing it, I want to do it better, look at me?
Well, there was an article in, just out a couple days ago in the Arizona Mirror, to take one example. Daniel Hernandez, in his three going on 4 years in the state legislature, has voted roughly 90% of the time with the Democratic caucus. But I think it's worth focusing on what is that 10%? Historically, it appears that that 10% is typically on economic issues, business issues, industry issues, where he and one or two other key Democrats, moderate Democrats in the state house, are flipping over to vote with the GOP. Just yesterday, in fact, Mr. Hernandez voted with his GOP colleagues on a bill on a bill that arguably is related to climate change, but is probably, he voted with GOP out of business considerations. When we're talking about education, we are talking about taxation. And my concern is that Mr. Hernandez is more inclined, has a greater propensity to side with his GOP colleagues when it comes, when he's asked to whether to favor or oppose tax loopholes, when he's at, when he's called upon to close potentially tax loopholes. Democrats are going to likely, I don't want to jinx it, but are likely to take control of the state house in the 2020 elections for the first time since 1966. And when they do so, I think it's important we have Democrats in solidly blue districts like Legislative District 2, where we don't have to ask the question, is our representative from that district going to flip over with to the GOP and widen our fiscal gap and therefore and thereby take away basic critical funding from K through 12 education? And I think I can make a case in this race that there's a significant risk that reelecting Mr. Hernandez is not a sure bet on closing those tax loopholes and increasing the pool of resources for K through 12 education.
I want to get to water in a second, but just to finish this conversation, what would you say to business owners in LD2, even Democratic business owners, assuring them that their interests will be held in mind as well by a Billy Peard representative?
The number one response to that question is, I will talk and I will listen. I will pay attention. When you talk to business, first of all, when we talk about business owners, what I'm focusing on are small business owners, local businesses, not corporate interest businesses. And when I talk to small business owners throughout Legislative District 2, what I hear are things like, we're ignored. Our interests are ignored. I'll give an example. In Santa Cruz County, there's a pervasive message that I hear from business owners who say they're not talking about taxes. That's not what they're concerned about. What they're primarily concerned about is the bureaucracy. What they're primarily concerned about is red tape in terms of getting into business in the first place, or if you're a small restaurant owner or a small shopkeeper, getting the adequate permits, the necessary permits to expand your business, and not knowing how to navigate that process, and it being, frankly, a Byzantine process for many business owners.
You list water as one of your primary issues as well, and certainly a lot of our callers and listeners to this show in this station are concerned about our water supply and the sustainability of our housing and our growth, how that matches with water. Just in interest of time, what's one state house-led policy around water that is either concerning to you or that you'd like to be a part of implementing should you be elected by the LD2 voters?
There's been a few proposals this year, led in large part by Representative Engel, and I tip my hat to her and other of her colleagues. I think the single, there's a number of wonky things, and water law is complicated, but one of the single most important things in my mind is we have to lend some reform to the what we call the Groundwater Act of 1980. In 1980, the legislature, under the leadership of Governor Babbitt, passed what was really a pretty revolutionary piece of legislation that lent systematic reform to the way we draw down our groundwater reserves. And it was a good bill for the time, and it still has its strengths. But that was 40 years ago. We need to reform it. We need to modernize the Groundwater Act. And if elected, I'll pay a particular attention to that. I think that some of the legislators this cycle or this session are trying to achieve much of that through bits of legislation. I think there's currently five or six pieces of legislation pending on different things, ranging from wells to how we manage our drawdown of aquifers in the rural parts of the state.
Your website is BillyPeard, P-E-A-R-D.com, BillyPeard.com. You list a number of issues that you want to speak into through the campaign. The third one, just to touch on real quick, is democracy. Probably not an issue that you'll see on many candidates' front page as a top issue. Give us the kind of 60-second review of why that's an issue for you.
Well, all the other issues, frankly, stem from that one, and it's the fountainhead issue. In an era, what we lawyers call a post-Shelby era, an era since 2013 when there is no longer federal oversight of our elections processes, where a state, either through the legislature or through administrative changes, can frankly limit the electorate, can require more ID, impose more ID requirements for voting, etc. We have to, at a state level, in that post-Shelby era, where there's no federal oversight, we need to self-regulate better. We need to have a check on how we are enfranchising or disenfranchising, how we decide who votes and who does not vote among the citizenry. And that's what I hope to do if elected, is really have a fine-tooth comb and look at what we're doing. We need to, frankly, expand the electorate or expand the franchise.
BillyPeard.com. That about brings us to time, and would love to continue the conversation, but I'd cut you off in 30 seconds, so I won't do that. But Billy, thank you for spending some time with us. Again, Democrat running for State House Legislative District 2. BillyPeard.com is where you can go find out more information, and good luck on the trail. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Zach.
Tucson, when we come back, we'll talk about the surprising numbers behind TUSD's free and reduced lunch and homeless in Tucson's parks. That's what's going on the rest of the way. Tipping Point, 1030 The Voice. I'm Zach Yenser, host of Tipping Point. We know that one out of every four persons in Tucson is living in poverty. I'm pleased to be partnering with Impact of Southern Arizona, a nonprofit that works to stabilize families and guide and support them on pathways out of poverty. Celebrating their 20th anniversary, they've invested $22 million into the community and are just getting started. Head to impactsoaz.org for more information and to explore how you can get a credit on your state taxes this year by supporting them. As always, talk to your tax professional.
So many of you listening right now are leading a successful and growing business here in Tucson. You know it depends on finding and keeping the right talent. Doing it right can help you stand out and have an edge as a leading employment brand. Wing it, and you might see a great candidate head to a competitor. The Talent Store has helped local Tucson companies like yours win the battle for talent through their recruiting services and consulting. Whether you're looking for a high-level leader, filling a key position, or just want to retain and develop your current team, visit yourtalentstore.com today for a free consultation.
Tucson, Tipping Point is proud to have Why I Love Where I Live as a sponsor of our program. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Visit their shop filled with locally designed goods and resources to encourage an appreciation and curiosity about what makes Tucson special and unique. Located at the MSA Annex just west of I-10 and Congress, find more details and shop hours at their website, whyilovewhereilive.com. Tucson, welcome back to Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Thanks for doing it with us each and every day. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to join the conversation. If you just joined us, we wrapped up our two-part interview with one of the three candidates on the Democratic side running for Legislative District 2, a rather large district. Green Valley is about a third of the voters for LD2. It runs from 22nd Street down to the Arizona-Mexico border. It's a very large district geographically, about 80 miles from tip to tip. And it's an interesting race because of the dynamics involved. One of the state house representatives is terming out, and so she is looking to be elected to the Senate seat. The senator from LD2, Andrew D'Alessandro, has turned out of the Senate, so she's running for the House. Again, kind of the funny thing being is, I think it was, 1994 was when the state put in term limits. And it is the letter of the law that different houses can run for, the House can run for the Senate can run for the House, but it's funny to see how it's kind of played out. And that's what's happening in LD2. Long-time kind of Tucson figure, Daniel Hernandez Jr., is the famous face there, I would say, of LD2, and he is the incumbent, and he is running. And so we talked to one of those candidates, Billy Peard, who is the only currently non-elected candidate on the Democratic side running for one of the two seats. And so we sat down with him as part of our wide-ranging election 2020 coverage. And our goal, I'm just going to put this out there, our goal is and will be to talk to everybody. Our goal is to not just have one side or the other or one person or the other. Our goal, to the best of our ability, will be to provide you with the diversity of voices and ideas that are running for these seats, and you get to make the call. That's our job. We do the news. You make the call. Election 2020 here. It's 1030 The Voice. Make it your one-stop shop, and Tipping Point is a part of that. So that's what we did the first half of the hour. I want to move to a couple of stories that I think have been interesting or have been not decided by me to be interesting in the news this past week. One is, I want to share the surprising numbers behind TUSD's free and reduced lunch. And then the homeless in Tucson parks story that really popped in the last week has taken social media by storm. We'll get your thoughts on that. I want to know what you're thinking about this issue. So get those phones ready, 790-2040. But let me start with this article that really caught my attention for a very small reason. And it's this story by Danielle Camara from today in the paper. And it was based on the TUSD governing board meeting that happened on Tuesday of this week. And you've probably seen this article by now. TUSD works to avert $1 million in unpaid lunch debt with a cap on charged meals. And there's a micro detail I want to focus on about this story. But basically what happened is in the middle part of 2017, the Federal Anti-Lunch Shaming Act was passed, which led to schools providing a meal regardless of whether a student has the money to pay. And this is as reported by, again, Danielle Camara, a reporter for The Star. So for the last 2.5 years, the district has stopped the district stopped the two lunch cap, and unpaid meal charges shot up to nearly $230,000. In the second year, last year, it was $365,000. Without a change, again, this is post 2017 federal law, led the school district to put in a policy, look, we're not going to ask, can you pay for food or not? So again, the first year, $230,000. When the school district said, we're not going to stop the two lunch cap, unpaid meal charges went up by $230,000, then $365,000 last year. The district was on track to end the current school year with a $700,000 to a $1 million tab. Again, food that's being given that isn't being paid for creates debt for the school district. So that's interestingly enough. I'm sure everyone has a hot take on that. We could talk about that. It's clear to me that even though the spirit of the law was don't make young people feel bad that they can't pay, I understand the psychology of it, didn't work. It led to people taking advantage of the system even when they weren't trying to. Again, we could talk about that. But anyway, $700,000 to $1 million is a lot of annual debt just on food. But here's the number that caught my eye. District-wide, I'm quoting, district-wide, 67% of the student body qualifies for free and reduced lunch. 67% of the student body qualifies for free and reduced lunch. That's not to say that everyone, you know, everybody of that 67% takes advantage of it. Some do more, some do less, but numerically, 67% of the student body qualifies for free and reduced lunch. I made the face that Tom just made of going, that is almost 70%. But the question that my guess is Tom was also asking, I'm just reading body language, who knows if I'm right, but my question that I think a lot of you are asking is, what's the math behind qualifying for free and reduced lunch? And so I did some digging. And looked at the federal definitions of free and reduced lunch. So the quick guide is that under federal rules to be eligible for example, SNAP benefits, the gross monthly income of a family has to be 130% of the poverty line. So the poverty line is, there's a number to that. For a three-person family, it's $2,311 a month. $2,311 a month. So I'll just do the math in real time. 130% of that is $3,000 a month, right? About $3,000 a month, and that's gross. So the household's income before any other program deductions are applied must be at or below 130% of the poverty line. Let me clarify that a little bit. For a family of three, the poverty line is now in 2020, $1,778 a month. So that's actually the number, is $1,778 a month times 130% is $2,311. Right? Now, if you look at on the reduced side, household income has to be between 130 to 185% of the federal poverty level. That's around $3,000 a month. So in other words, 67% of TUSD's district households, they're eligible. They're making between $2,300 and $3,000 gross a month. The reason why that number stood out to me is I think that alone gives a picture of the challenges that we face in the second largest school district in Arizona. If 67% of families in TUSD are making between $28,000 and $30,000 a year. Again, this is Pima County. This is the city of Tucson. This is our TUSD school district. The lack of opportunity, the amount of poverty, the decisions that we've made over the last decades has led us to this point where 67% of students and families in TUSD are making less than $35,000 to $38,000 a year. That's incredible to me. And that's the number that stood out, right? We could talk about school policy and governing board policy, and did we make the right decision for 2 years to not ask questions about whether you can afford it or not? The piece that I pulled out of this article is, again, 67% of the student body qualifies for free and reduced lunch. That's a number that should scare us.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is there any information pertaining to what the sources of income is? Or are these single family, are single parents, are these both parents not working or anybody working, or how is that? And how would that figure in?
No, that is a great question. From what I was able to research, they do it on number of people in the household. So I'm sure there is data. I wasn't able to find that data on single family, dual income. What counts as income, I was able to dig into that. I'm looking at the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. SNAP counts cash income from all sources. That's earned income, that's cash assistance, Social Security, unemployment insurance. So basically any money coming in, either earned or unearned in terms of benefits, they say that's income. So they don't seem to line item break it down by where does it come from or who's making it. They just say, if you have X amount of people per household with income coming from these income streams, we add it all up and we say, this is what you have to make. This is the requirement.
Now, this near 70% being eligible for reduced cost or no cost lunches in the schools, is this across the district, all of the districts, or mainly one district or a couple of districts?
Another good question. My assumption is, just because we know TUSD is a higher poverty district, the numbers are probably high in other districts, but not that high. My guess would be, without looking, is that TUSD probably has the highest poverty.
But they're probably not the only one.
Probably not the only one.
And then my final question is, what is behind this being that many families in the Tucson area that are below the poverty level? Why do we have so many, as much as almost 70% of the kids in school?
Yep.
Their families are all at or below the poverty level. Why do we have so many?
Yep. So I have two quick thoughts on it, and it probably doesn't do it justice, but we're live and having the conversation. So the two things that I would say are, we know that Pima County is a high poverty county. Tucson is a high poverty county. And on the economics and economic mobility side, we have not grown our economy to where there's opportunity for the most people. So I think there's an economic challenge. The other thing we know about Pima County is, in my mind, we're seeing a reduced middle class. In other words, you have some who are doing really, really well, make $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 and up a year. I think you have then a lower middle class. That donut hole, we know it just doesn't exist. There's a donut hole.
And this is a reflection of the type of jobs that are available,
right,
that would qualify as middle class wages or lower middle class,
right,
or
that's
what have you.
That's what I'm extrapolating from. The part B of that is that when you look at economic mobility and geographic mobility favors the economically mobile. This isn't classism. This isn't making a case for XYZ. I'm just saying is, if you are a family in Tucson and you don't want to send your student to TUSD, if you have economic mobility, you have the ability to say, you know, I want to send my son or daughter to BASIS, or I want to go to another school district or to another private or charter school. Families that don't have economic mobility are also geographically stuck. We know that to be true in the county, in the state, across the country. And so you have a TUSD district where students with economic choice, households with economic choice, I think are able to move kids in and out of the district. Meanwhile, students that are lower middle class or closer to poverty are coming from families that don't have that opportunity. And so I think TUSD, I think the data shows this, TUSD has become a district with a specifically denser population of poverty. If any of our listeners have knowledge or an idea that I don't, give us a call, 790-2040. That's what I'm seeing and hearing out there in answer to your question. Let's head to our last break of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk about homeless in the parks. I have just seen so many people I wouldn't think agree on this issue, agree on this issue. It's fascinating. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere, Tucson.
Today's hot real estate market comes with its own challenges. If you're trying to buy a home, you have to move fast or it's gone fast. Selling your home, that's just always a hassle. But it doesn't have to be your experience. My friend Jason Carlton is a real estate consultant servicing the Tucson metro area. His passion is to help families sell and buy homes with expertise, genuine care, and responsiveness. Feel free to call or text him with any real estate needs to get started. 520-310-6761. I'm Zach Yenser, host of Tipping Point. We know that one out of every four persons in Tucson is living in poverty. I'm pleased to be partnering with Impact of Southern Arizona, a nonprofit that works to stabilize families and guide and support them on pathways out of poverty. Celebrating their 20th anniversary, they've invested $22 million into the community and are just getting started. Head to impactsoaz.org for more information and to explore how you can get a credit on your state taxes this year by supporting them. As always, talk to your tax professional.
When did you lose control? Was it when you became a number and not a person? Or was it when you accepted that this is just the way things are? Truth is, you didn't lose control. You gave it up. Because you have a choice. You can make them too big to fail and fail to belong to something bigger. Or you can put your money where your values lie and make your community too strong to fail. The choice is yours. Or are you going to give that up too? Vantage West. Banks own you. You own us.
Federally insured by NCUA.
It's that time of year. Everyone hates it. It's tax time. But there's no reason to stress. Shanae and the team at Simply Bookkeeping and Taxes can take care of it all for you and make it simple and easy. For Tipping Point listeners only, Shanae is offering a one-time special offer of 50% off your personal or business tax prep. Call 520-838-0856 and let her know Zach sent you to get started.
Tucson, welcome back to an always fast moving hour here on Tipping Point. If you missed any of the hour, we continue with our election 2020 coverage of local, state, and national races with Legislative District 2 for State House. We talked to candidate Billy Peard, one of the three Democrats running for the seat. And our goal, again, is to talk to as many of the Republicans and Democrats for all of the key local Arizona and Southern Arizona seats that are being campaigned for, whether county, whether it's state. We want to be a hub for just getting the information out to you, and then you get to make the decision, your vote, your voice, part of our election 2020 coverage here on 1030 The Voice and Tipping Point. Before we get too deep in the weeds on our last topic, I just want to shout out our segment sponsor for this segment. It is The Talent Store, founded by my friend Devin Underwood. As larger companies move into our market and the talent pool continues to tighten, organizations that approach talent attraction, acquisition, and retention as a holistic talent strategy will stand out and have an edge as a leading employment brand. And if you're a local company in Tucson, you gotta be that to win the fight for talent. So let Devin Underwood be your teammate in that, whether you're looking to attract a high-level leader or filling a key position, or you're retaining and developing your current teams. Don't wing it. For more information, visit yourtalentstore.com and schedule a free consultation. The Talent Store is where thought leadership, opportunity, and talent connect to create growth. So I wanted to, and as much time as we have left, get into this really interesting story and take your phone call, 790-2040. This story that I think TPD and Park Safety thought was going to be harmless, but I've seen this blow up like few other recent stories. The city of Tucson reminds people that handing out food at parks, feeding the homeless or bringing food to the homeless, is illegal, not allowed without proper permits. And there was a statement put out by Tucson Police Park Safety a couple of days ago that talked about City Code 21-4. It says if you are bringing food for more than XYZ people, you have to have a permit. And the concern from the police safety side was that, hey, look, we're trying to find homes for the homeless. We're trying to get them to mental health rehab. We're trying to help them with certain services. We're finding that when folks bring food, that food becomes litter, or maybe it's food that the person is allergic to that causes other problems. Or we're just trying to say, hey, we're trying to provide a pathway out of homelessness, and if our homeless population believes that they can come and they can get food, they're going to keep coming. So would you just please stop feeding the homeless? And I bet you anything, Police Park Safety and TPD did not estimate the complaints from the right and left of Tucson on this. And I saw both neighbors and residents on the right or the left politically say, what in the world? Why would you ever limit somebody from helping the homeless? And people have been texting me and asking me, hey, what do you think about this? And it's a challenge. It's a challenging topic for me because it comes from a systems breakdown. We're seeing for decades, our parks being home to a lot of homeless, not necessarily activated for our overall residential population. And I can understand Police Park Safety side. I can understand neighborhood side. Maybe Ingrid, who called 790-2040, can shed some light on this situation. Ingrid, you're live. Thanks for calling in.
Actually, I have a question. I don't know how much light I can set on it. When people who are hungry and homeless go to, say, a formal private entity like a church, churches frequently have giveaway times of food. Mm-hmm. How do the police respond to that? If I had a private organization,
yep,
or an informal group and wanted to go to a park, knowing that there are hungry people there, if I were to have them give out the food and come around until everybody was done eating and picked up mm-hmm. the mess that comes with eating, would that be a problem?
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because in the first kind of press release, this was actually where TPD and Park Safety requested people to go. They said, if you'd like to continue to be generous, please be aware that there are other alternatives that legally provide and support the homeless. They mentioned churches. They mentioned other nonprofit programs. They mentioned shelters and soup kitchens. They're basically saying, look, we would rather you partner, rather than as an individual, that you partner with one of these social service organizations who have the permitting and have the ability to do this, rather than diverting it to the park.
Well, okay. So you want people to go to a they want people to go to a specific facility to eat, but what's wrong with being out in the open and doing it that way? There's got to be some reason. Does it have to do with bathroom facilities, washing up after you eat and before you eat?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ingrid. Yeah, the statement from the parks, maybe we'll cover this a little bit tomorrow as well, because it's an interesting situation, is, again, littering, health, and just trying to provide better services. But it caught a firestorm. Message me, Zach Yenser, what do you think? Tucson, we'll be back on Friday to continue on Tipping Point. We'll see you there.